Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Message Podcast of Friends Church. My name is Gregory and I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really do hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say a quick thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things that we're able to do is because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to the website, friendschurch.ca, and click the Donate tab. Or better yet, download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy this week's message. Okay, today I want to start with a parable. But it's not a parable from the Bible. I'll do a Bible one in a second, but this is a different parable. It starts with a guy, and he's alone in his house. His wife has died fairly recently, and he's in that in-between phase where everything of hers is still there. He gets up every morning. He does the same ritual. He sits in his same seat in the table. He doesn't sit in her seat. He goes and does his day. He gets into bed on his side of the bed. Her side of the bed still made. All of her stuff still on the bedside table. And it's this really sad kind of vision of life. As he's just mourning. You know, he loved her desperately, like dearly. She was his world. And now you can tell he just doesn't know what to do. And so there's kind of this weird turn of events, and a bunch of guys break into his house. And they find him in the bedroom, and he hears a noise, he comes out, and they, you know, people in your house with a balaclava, obviously a little scary, right? And so they beat him up. Like, it's just, this guy can't catch a break, right? And in the story, this kind of weird things happen. A dog comes out in between the moment, between this moment of the guy's attacking this homeowner, this guy has, you know, lost his wife. And the dog is a really special moment. Because a couple weeks earlier, you know, after his wife's passed and after the funeral's done, he gets a knock on his door. It's a delivery. Some of you already know where I'm going with this, don't you? It's a little note from his wife. It says, "John, I love you. And I know that you need to love something else. And so I brought you something to love." Hey, Tracer, come on, buddy. How you doing? How's your debut, huh? Everyone, this is Tracer. Say hi, buddy. You want to come sit on my lap? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Isn't he a good dog? And so this guy who, you know, has lost his wife now gets a dog to love. And he just loves this dog. It goes everywhere with him. But the dog gets in between the attackers and him. And with no malice, really no thought, the attackers kill the dog. "Don't listen, buddy. It's okay. No one's going to hurt you." And what happens after this moment, after the dog is killed, is one of the best movies of revenge I've ever seen in a long-ass time. Anyone John Wick fans out there? What an incredible movie, huh? All because of a dog. Now, for those of you who don't know this, after the dog is killed, again, I apologize, buddy, John Wick goes on a rampage of revenge. And when I say a rampage, I mean like a rampage. He kills everyone between him and the person who hurt his dog. Everybody. Now, the question I want to ask today is, why do we love revenge movies so much? It's not just because they have cute dogs. Right, Tracer? There's something in revenge movies that we just seem to connect to, doesn't it? From Mean Girls to Girl with the Dragon Tattoo? Is that the right name? Peppermint, another new one. Rambo, anyone see the new Rambo? Anyone see the new Rambo? Thank you. Ooh. What's up, buddy? You like Rambo? Yeah, yeah, okay. So, we seem to love revenge movies. Okay, just lay down with me, okay? Come here, buddy, lay down.
Don't get all excited now. Do not pee on my lap, please. We're talking about Rambo now, okay? Yeah, relax. Oh, he sees his family. Okay, we're going to get our guest dog a little break and take him back to his family, can we? Is that okay? Everyone say goodbye to Tracer. Bye, buddy. Okay. Oh, come with me. Can you jump off that high? Thank you. Whoa. So this revenge movie starts with a dog and ends up with, like, I don't know how many people dead. Peppermint starts with a family killed and, like, basically an entire cartel wiped out. Mean Girl starts with a mean thing to, like, complete social annihilation. We love this idea of revenge, don't we? We love to see people hurt when they hurt other people. Because the reality is we've all been hurt, right? Sometimes it starts with just the smallest little thing. A word said that wasn't kind or maybe wasn't skillful. And you can feel it, right? You ever had that word where someone just says something or they say it in a tone and you're just like, oh, that didn't feel good. Sometimes it's how people have treated us. Sometimes it's relational. Sometimes it's at work. And you just feel that. Sometimes it's brutal things where people who've loved you, who are supposed to take care of you, hurt you deeply. And so we can all connect with this feeling inside that says, I want revenge. I want this feeling that I have to go away. And somehow in my brain, if I could just get back at them. I was thinking of the revenge stories that I wanted to tell you guys. And unlike Jeff, I'm not willing to share my deepest, darkest secrets. He's very good at that, isn't he? It's incredible what that guy's willing to share. I'm just going to wipe up the water so I don't crash here in a second. I was in seminary, so Bible school, like master's level Bible school. Kind of makes the story a bit more ridiculous. But I was in advanced Greek exegesis, which means that you sit around in a debate Greek translation all day. Super fun, huh? And I wrote my first paper on the word euangelion, which is the word that we translate good news or gospel. Anyone ever heard of the gospel? Kind of a big word, huh? I thought I'd just go for it, right? Take the biggest one, take the one that's the most difficult, and just go for it. I wrote this paper. So you're looking at pre-Bible Greek, post-Bible Greek, all the different words that are around that word, how it's used all the different times. Like I'm telling you guys, we geek out on this stuff big time. And so I write this paper with incredible amount of research behind it. I hand it in, I get it back, and it's the worst mark I've ever gotten in my entire career. I can still feel that one. I thought I'd just take a breath or two and just be like, okay. Maybe he didn't read my paper because his comments, he'd be like, you didn't deal with this. Two paragraphs later, I dealt with that. And then there'd be another section, well, have you addressed this issue? I addressed it one page later. Did you even read my frickin' paper? So I thought, you know, I'll be the kind, loving, Christian Bible school kind of kid that I am. I'm going to go talk to my prof. And be like, dude, did you even read this thing? Like, seriously. How do you think that went? Not awesome. I am, folks, I know I process all my feelings through anger, but this was like pure rage, like injustice. This is like my entire career. If I want to go do my PhD, like everything, my entire life seems to be tied up in this stupid bloody mark of a great paper that he just doesn't like my answer to, even though it's well-researched and perfectly acceptable. Not to grind an axe anymore. So what do you think I did? The next class, he came in, and we started to look at different texts, and I literally ground him down on every interpretation that he had from that day until the very last day of that class. I literally, if I could make him wrong in front of the class, I delighted in it. I would just be looking, it'd be like this. Bam! And then I would just make him look like an ass in front of everybody. At Bible school. But there's something about, right? Like, you know, you screwed me over on an incredible paper, I'm getting you back. And yeah, I can't grade your papers, you chump, but I can make you look like an ass in front of the entire class for the rest of the semester. For anyone who was in that class, if you're hearing my voice, I apologize, because we probably got nothing done that whole year, because all I did is argue with the professor. My apologies. But there's something about revenge that we like, right? You hurt me, I'm going to get you back. This will not go unanswered. I want revenge. Okay. I want to explore this concept of revenge because, like the seven deadly sins, I actually don't think it's always wrong. In the case of a Bible school student who's got a horrible mark in his paper, that was completely justified, wasn't it? Seriously, people. But to explore revenge, I actually want to start with a parable. This whole series was based in stories from Jesus. And so this is the story that this came from. Jesus, wrote up for me, Austin? Jesus told them a story showing that it was necessary for them to pray consistently and never quit. So this is a story in a book by a guy we call Luke. He names himself Luke. Now, just as a side note, Jesus never, ever, ever says what the meaning of his story is. So this, our best guess is this is coming from the guy who took the story and put it into his work. So he's trying to kind of like wiggle this story into something that he wants to say. And the story goes like this. There's once a judge in some city who never gave God a thought and cared nothing for people. I'm not sure why he didn't give God a thought, and I don't know why that's important for the story, but whatever. A widow in that the city kept after him saying, my rights are being violated, protect me. Can you go to the next slide? And he never gave her the time of day. But after this went on and on and on, he said to himself, I care nothing for what God thinks, even less for what people think. But because this widow won't quit badgering me, isn't that a great word? Badgering me. I'd better do something and see that she gets justice. Otherwise, I'm going to end up beaten black and blue by her pounding. This is a translation by a guy named Eugene Peterson. It's one called The Message. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to get at the feeling of the story. You know, that lurid badgering, beaten black and blue. It's kind of picturesque, isn't it? But what it does is it hides part of the story. It hides the part of the story that I really need you guys to pay attention to. Can you throw up that next line for me, Austin? Sorry, just one more, if you don't mind. That was the one line. Okay, let me read you the line that I want to talk about, because clearly I didn't do my notes very well. I apologize, Austin. That was my bad. Okay, it says near the end, there was once a judge in some city, and a widow kept after him. The way it's translated is, I didn't put that in my notes. It says something about, like, give me justice. There we go. That word, give me justice, feels like this is an issue of justice. It's like the courts, right? But actually, the translation of that word is better translated like this. Take revenge against those who hurt me. Someone did something to me, and I want you who has power to get them. And don't just make them pay. That's justice. I want you to go further. Make them pay. This is what every kid who has to step away from a bully in school, who has to go to this, tell the teacher, hey, I'm being bullied. Most times it's, you know, beautiful, but sometimes they're going, teacher, I want you to make that kid pay for what they did to me. I want vengeance. What do we do with that? Is vengeance a good thing? Because the story seems to suggest that it's a good thing, right? Sorry, I know what I did wrong now, Austin. This is the part where she's supposed to read my mind, and it's not really good in there. Can you bring up the end of the story from a couple lines earlier? There we go, where you already were. Then the master said, do you hear what the judge corrupt as he's saying? So this is the author saying of Jesus. Do you hear what the judge corrupt as he is saying? So what makes you think God won't step in and do justice for his chosen people who continue to cry out for help? Won't he stick up for them? I assure you he will. He will not drag his feet. I'll just stop it there. The main plot of the story, before we understand how that word's translated, is a story of if you just harangue God enough, and a very particular conception of God, if you just keep praying to that God over and over and over and over and over and over again, you can get that God to do what you want. Anyone ever seen a situation where they prayed a whole lot and it didn't work? There's many a crisis of faith that have fallen on that story. I prayed for that person to be healed and nothing happened. I prayed that my life would go better and nothing happened. And that seems to be what the author is trying to say the story is about. But the story inside the story, I actually think it's the John Wick story. She says, I want revenge. This isn't about praying without ceasing. That's not what it seems to be about. That's what the author put around it. The story inside of it seems to be about going, no. Somebody hurt me, and I want them to pay. We all know what happens when this starts, right? It always starts with a dog. Yannick's going to miss the whole service, isn't he? Let's all give Yannick a sigh. Oh, sorry, Yannick. It starts with a dog. It ends up with John Wick killing 77 people. 77 people. Now that dog was, Tracer's pretty cute, right? 77 people though? I was in Belfast a while ago, and I was on, there's a bar on the corner of Union and Kent Street called the Sunflower Bar. It's the last bar that has the kind of the outside components of the Troubles. The Troubles is the Civil War part. I'm not sure what you call it. They call it the Troubles, which is this really nice way of saying, like, really bad stuff happened. But basically, part of them sided with the British, part of them wanted to get rid of the British. And those parts, represented by the Catholics and the Protestants, fought and fought brutally. And this bar was part of that. It's kind of right in the main area that's kind of right between the two groups. Not right between, but it's in that area. And so when you walk up to the bar, do you have a picture for that? When you walk up to the bar, there's this kind of, they've painted a green cage on the outside. Everyone just rotate that in your brain, okay? The part on the bottom right there, see the part? It's actually a cage. It's kind of like you see in jails, right? They buzz you through one door, you go inside, and then you have to close that door, and it locks. And now you're locked in this box, and there's a camera. And the way it worked was you walked in there, you closed the door, and the bartender would look in the monitor from the video camera and see if you were carrying guns, bombs, you know, all sorts of horrible things that they were using in those days. And if you passed muster, they'd buzz the inside door, and you'd walk in. And if you didn't, they kept the inside door locked, and they just let you out again. And why did they have this? Because the Troubles were characterized by revenge. There's this group, there's that group. Someone in my group killed someone in your group. They killed your brother. And what did you do? You came back and you killed their brothers. You see how that works? I killed your brother, you killed my brothers. It was so bad that they couldn't let just anyone into the bar. Because you'd be sitting there drinking your pint of Guinness, you and your brother having a time, you haven't seen each other in a while, getting caught up. Someone would walk in the bar with a gun, kill you both, kill the people around you, just spray bullets into the crowd. See, that's how revenge works. It starts with something, one thing, and it grows. It starts with a dog. It ends up with 77 people dead. It starts with a brother in Northern Ireland. It ends up with families killed. In the time of the Troubles, over the years, 3,600 people were killed one by one like that. You hurt me, I'll hurt you and one more. And what do you think happened then? They retaliated back to me, and suddenly I'm killed, my family's killed, and then my greater family responds again and comes back and forth. It just keeps escalating over and over, growing bigger and bigger until you can't even contain it anymore. That's the core of revenge, right? It needs escalation. If it's just the same, you know, if it's eye for an eye, it's just justice. But revenge is always bigger. I remember my brother when we were little, he would literally sit there with his arm like this going, if you punch me, I'll punch you harder. If you punch me, I'll punch you harder. And I'd be like, how fast could I get away? Is this going to hurt, right? It's revenge. Now, here's the thing. When you study the literature on revenge, the research says revenge needs something really important. It needs a deterrent factor. That's why you escalate. Think about it back to, you know, hunter-gatherer days. There's 30 of us living in a little band of people, and you come and let your dog take a crap in my cave. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm not going to go like, stop letting your dog crap in my cage, right? I'm going to go and take four dogs and let them all crap on your cave and be like, you want to do that? That's where this is going to go. It's a deterrent. And next time you're thinking, I should just let my dog out, let him crap wherever I want, you're thinking, oh yeah, that didn't go very well, did it? It's a deterrent. It's something that says, if you do this thing that hurts me, I will respond with something more. And that's why it escalates. It keeps growing. And that's why I think when we see John Wick, they killed his dog. Now, they took his car, too, and it was a really beautiful car. But still, 77 people dead? Is that not a bit of an escalation there? And yet, it seems totally normal to us. When we watch a movie like that, we're like, oh, yeah, that feels about right, right? It's interesting when we look at how revenge works, often we don't even call it revenge. I was talking to Jeff and Carmen about revenge, and they're like, oh, that's not revenge. Oh, that's not revenge. But really, it's a response that has a deterrent with it. If that's how we define revenge, almost anything can be revenge, right? I say something to you that's a little bit crass, a little bit mean, and you burst into tears and just like totally go camp on it, right? Like, I can't believe how much you hurt me, right? Will I not want to say that anymore? But let's go deeper. A friend of you doesn't invite you to a party that you really want to go to, and like your friendship is at the level you should have been invited to that party. What do you do? Do you not call them for 3 weeks after that? When they ask you what's wrong, oh, nothing, just been busy. Is that not a behavior designed to be a deterrent to not be forgotten again? We see this in couples all the time. Not me, of course. This is not me. You forget something that your partner really values, right? What do they come back with? They forget two things that you value. And then voices get raised back and forth. And pretty soon, we call it the downward spiral from hell. It just basically takes your relationship down, right? Oh yeah? Oh yeah? Oh yeah? And pretty soon, neither of you are doing anything for each other. The first one was, you hurt me by forgetting that. And now I'm going to do a behavior that is going to remind you to never, ever do that again to me. What happens is it just keeps escalating. What happens is you're sitting in front of your counselor going, I'm not sure how we got here. You might not use the word, but it's revenge. There's another line from Jesus that says this. It says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. When I was a kid, I thought that was the weirdest line. If we're playing in the playground and I like accidentally hit you in the eye when we're playing King of the Castle, do you get to walk up and like punch me after in the eye? Like, is that how this is? I thought that was the weirdest line. But think about it from a culture where revenge was commonplace. You kill my dog, I kill 77 of you. Belfast, you kill my brother, I kill your family. Eye for an eye is now something that says, no, 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 only equal response. No more escalation. You hurt me, I can hurt you back, but only as much as you hurt me. No more. Interesting idea, isn't it? You can see how it would be like, it kind of just takes this escalation factor and just kind of levels it all out and says, no, 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 You hurt me, I hurt you, and then it's done. Our justice system originally was based on this concept. You hurt me, we figure out a fair response to that hurt. And you pay it, and then it's done. It's over. No more. And in our lives, we can see, you know, as a couple, you know, you forget something important to me. Okay, I can hurt you, but I can't escalate it. I can only forget one thing that'll hurt you, not six. A friend of mine doesn't invite me to a party. I can only not invite them to a party. I can't not talk to them for the next 6 weeks. Think through your life, the number of times you've responded with escalation. And the thing is, it's totally justified, right? Your brain is wired to do this. This is how evolution created you, that you would see an escalation as a deterrent. Sometimes we do it without even thinking about it. They hurt me, of course I'll escalate. That's the right thing to do, right? I want to think of one more way of looking at this. It's this line by Jesus would have grown up with this line. It's not from him. It's from earlier in his tradition. It says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." The Lord is just another way of saying God. But before I get into this, let me just kind of remind you of something. That word God, that's a tricky word. Because as soon as I say God, some of you are in your Homer Simpson brain going, oh yeah, old man in the sky, right? You know, he's got the big beard. You don't really see his face. Homer's like, please get me out of this thing I did again. Makes sense, right? This idea of God as a super being is a very common thing. And even though Homer Simpson is kind of a tongue-in-cheek version, many of us have versions of this. Loving Father, you know, all these. Anytime we conceive of God as something, It's a God in the sky conception of God. And I just want to say, there's nothing wrong with this conception. It's just not always the right one for all places and all times. So I'm not saying you need to change it. I'm just saying there's more ways to view it. Because the second one is God is, and I'm just going to remember what I said. God is the divine. So there's this idea that God isn't an entity, an old man in the sky, a loving father, any of those conceptions. God is kind of like the force of good in this world. You'd maybe use the word divine, right? It's not something, it's kind of like a force in the world. The other way you can look at it is God is an action. When I love you, when I do something of love to you, that love is God. And depending on how we view that word God in this moment will change everything on how we end this message. Because if we think of God as God in the sky, this idea of God from our story that says, if you pray unceasingly, God will take revenge for you, it means that it has to happen physically. God will hurt somebody for you. But if we open our minds a little bit and see God as love, maybe, what happens to this idea of revenge is mine, saith the Lord? What shifts then? Driving down the road the other day, this guy in a little mini, souped up mini, just friggin' flying, like cutting everyone off, swerving through traffic, you know, like onto the shoulder, back in again traffic, all the way across four lanes, flies through. If I saw him pulled over 5 minutes later by the cops, what do you think I'd be thinking? Karma is a bitch, buddy. But isn't that a way of looking at how we handle the hurts of our lives? Sure, we can get our hands dirty, and there's times I think that we need to get our hands dirty, and we need to escalate and be like, no, that's not going to happen. We go John Wick on their ass. Maybe not John Wick, but like little John Wick. We sometimes go eye for an eye, right? We let justice handle it. But what if there's a time when there's a hurt inside of you that you just don't know what to do with? There's no way to deal with it in another way, but you can feel it. It's still there. It just won't go. What if we gave it over to this karmic nature of God? Just said, look, I don't want to deal with this anymore. This thing here, I'm going to give it to God. Not old man in the sky, God. God is love. Because we've seen enough. The people who are horrible people aren't loved by the people around them. The people who are demanding and forcing people around them to do what they want, no one really wants to go and hang out with them, do they? Time and time again in the world, we see this kind of God is love concept, that when we're not loved to other people, there's no love coming back. It's almost like when there's no God in this moment, there's no God coming back. And it's almost like there's this divine punishment for the bad stuff that we do. I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but what if we read our story that way? What if we read the story through the lens that God is love will deal with the hurt, deal with the payback, deal with the revenge? You don't need to hold that anymore. You can let that hurt go. You can just have peace. I don't have to plot my revenge. I don't have to think about justice. I can just be free. Feels pretty nice, doesn't it? When I look at the story of revenge from our spiritual ancestors, I see a story that starts in a very real response. You do something to hurt me, I'll respond, and I'll respond in a big enough way that it will deter you from ever doing that again. Folks, I grew up in an era where there was no anti-bullying stuff. The only way you could stop a bully is to make it bad enough that they wouldn't do it again. If you ran, you get your butt handed to you. Sometimes there's moments where revenge is the right answer. Somebody in your relationship does something to you, and you don't need to go mad about it, but you stop and go, hold on a second, whoa, that wasn't cool. That I do not like. Even that's an escalation, right? I thought we were just joking. No. That's not cool. Sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes we need to just, whatever that hurt was, we give it over to the justice system and just say, it's not mine, eye for an eye. Just figure it out. Whatever is fair, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm just going to let the justice system figure it out, right? Eye for an eye. And I think there's some hurts inside of us that those two don't work. And we just need to give them away. Revenge is mine, saith the Lord. Let God is karma or God is love deal with it. I don't want to be held. I don't want to be weighted down by that hurt anymore. I'm going to give it away. I don't know what you guys need to do. When you feel that hurt inside of you, I don't know which one you need. But chances are you need one of them. And I want you to think deeply about which one you choose. Because you choose the wrong one, it will not work. Maybe there's a different one you can choose. Before I end, I just want to say one last thing. I want to put this series in the context of our entire community and what we're about. We're about trying to make the world a better place. That's it. We use the spiritual tradition to do it, but that's what we're here to do. So if you're trying to make your world worse, wrong place. Someone wrote our website copy for me one time, and he wrote this metaphor. He says, it's kind of like, we use this word water, it's these things that's good for us. It's like almost like there's water that gets poured into the cup of our lives, and it starts flowing out of our cups into the world around us. This isn't just for you. This isn't just for the hurt that you've been dealt. This isn't just so that you feel better. This is bigger than that. Think of a world where revenge is used only where it's appropriate. Think of the difference. Northern Ireland, 3,600 people killed, one by one. Not all of them, but most of them. Out of revenge. Did it work? No. Using the right response to hurt is a literal way to change our world and make it better. Stopping things that are coming at you that are hurting, stopping them, saying, whoa, 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 this isn't cool. Letting the justice system take it. Letting our hurts go so that we have capacity. Because when you're hurt and you don't know what to do with it, it's all consuming, right? You can feel it just stuck in there. And you have nothing for anyone else. Everything is me, but I'm hurt. You need to help me. You have nothing for anyone else. Think about a world where we can let this stuff go. Think about your families. Think about your work relationships. Think about all the people around you. If you can let some of this go and have capacity to love again, what would our world look like? That's why we talk about this. And that's the heart of Friends Church. If you want to be a part of that, you're in the right place. May we use revenge appropriately. And may we give things to God when we don't want to carry them anymore. Amen. One more thing. Next week, Jeff talking about lust. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week.